the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody.
Recording in progress. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. Well, we are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, family, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at B2BPsych. That's B, the number 2, B-P-S-Y-C-H, B2BPsych at gmail.com. As always, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, family issues, and community issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, or ideas or perspectives you hear on this show are not represented by Marshall University or WMUL, are not represented by any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, as horrible as it sounds, take this advice at your own risk. And Dr. Chapman loves to remind us that while some of this may be therapeutic, this is not what, sir?
This is not therapy, folks. And I'm sure, just like myself, that Dr. Keelan Hinton is having plenty of clients coming in and out, but this is the radio airwave. So right now we are psychologists and we're human and this is not being billed. And it's not therapy. That's the bottom line. We do hope that you get a therapist since you need one. And also that the information is useful to you.
All right. All right. So let's rock and roll. The weather is warming up. Check in, sir. How are you doing today? How is sunny California treating you?
California's good.
Good deal. Good deal. West Virginia, West by God, Virginia is always heaven, no matter rain, sleet, or snow. We are always happy. This is always a beautiful place. So again, let's rock and roll. We thank those who gave us questions, comments, and suggestions on our trauma, on our series on trauma. For those that would like to re-listen to that series, or any of our series, again, you can contact us, or you can contact us at B2BPsych, or as well as you can listen on Mahogany Love and Light, or on Dr. Chapman's platforms as well. You can listen to bits, pieces, and snippets there as well. So we're going to rock and roll, and let's go. And I think, Dr. Chapman, you want to start us off with, you know, what's going on in the world and this whole Johnny Depp case.
Yeah, and so first of all, I also want to follow up on what you said about getting to the sites if you want to see the information. So you mentioned Mahogany.
Love and Light.
Love and Light on Podbeam. And then my site is www.chapmantrainingandconsulting.com. So if you go there and then you go over to the section that says Brother to Brother Podcast, you can find them all there as well. So I have been seeing, or I'm sure that most of America has been seeing little snippets of this case that's going on with Johnny Depp. And it's basically a defamation case. He's suing his wife for defamation of character that I think came from an op-ed paper she did, which was making some accusations about him in terms of domestic violence and him being an abuser. And that seems to be, probably among other things, one of the things that he wants to clear the air about and make sure that title was behind that. So I just thought, we might take a few minutes to think about just reactions to the case and or thoughts in general. So, I mean, for me, it's not really specifically to the case, but it's more, it made me think of other people I've worked with. So based on what you've been, I wonder what was coming to mind for you.
My first initial thoughts were not specifically, it's interesting, like you said, not specifically about them, but just in general.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your take on this as well. Why do people stay in toxic situations? Why do people stay in dangerous situations? Why is it that it is obvious that the relationship is falling apart? We're out of character. We're about to kill each other or hurt each other truly badly. And yet and still, people decide to stay. And neither, there are only two people in a relationship. So as they say, only them and the good Lord knows, okay, what's truly going on. But I'm pretty sure that they both brought their baggage to this relationship. Why do you think people stay in horrible situations, even though they know they're bad? They can't make themselves leave.
I mean, I think this is the age old question, right? If this question could be resolved and I could answer it and then also give people the type of ingredients to not be in these situations again, we could discover these, we would be millionaires because, you know, a good percentage of relationships that are marriage relationships end up in divorce. And that's not counting the ones that don't make it to marriage in the first place. And I think that's a question that people want to know. I also think a more anecdotal evidence that this is a question that people want to know is how many shows it seems like on TV are about this type of thing. So I have this show that I was watching and it's called Ultimatum. But before this particular show was on Netflix, it's by Nick Lachey and his wife. And before that, they had another show. I can't remember the name of it. But basically, it would be people that never met, oh, is love blind or love is blind, something like that. And basically, they would set the show up where you're doing dates in these pods. You don't get to actually meet the person, and you only get to talk to them in a pod for a certain period of time, and you decide from that situation who you want to date. Anyways, the show that came after it was this Ultimatum show. The Ultimatum show really fits this question because in the Ultimatum show, I think the whole idea is crazy, first of all. That's why I watch. But also, the idea is that if you are giving your partner an ultimatum, either we're going to stay together, we're going to get married, or if you don't marry me, then we're going to break up. But with the show, you set that ultimatum, and then you come on the show with other couples, and these other couples, right, you break your relationship for this period of the show where you end up dating someone else to see if, you know, if that other person would work for you, if you're going to take the ultimatum, or if you're going to go and be single. Anyways, the bottom line to that whole explanation of it is you see things in those relationships when you're watching it that you're like, well, I don't know if this relationship is one that is better for both of you. I won't even call it toxic. I'll just say it doesn't seem like a relationship where you're both, but automatically when there's going to be an ultimatum, then that means one person feels a certain way about the relationship and the other one doesn't, whether it's toxic or not. But wondering, that led me to the question, why would you put yourself in a situation where you wanted to have an ultimatum? And I think I think it has to do with a couple things, whether it's toxic or not. It's, you've mentioned it plenty of times, we get used to certain things. And I don't think it's always about, it can be, but it's not always about this relationship putting you out of character. I think sometimes this relationship might highlight things that you were used to before this relationship. And then when you get in this relationship, it accentuates things about you that make you seem like you're out of pocket, which you are, but also some of those things were more likely to be a part of your relationship.
Give an example, speak more specifically about that when you say that. Like,
okay, so like, you know, let's say if you you know, you grow up in a family early on and your family environment is chaotic. Mm-hmm. And that's just what you're used to, not to any fault of your own, but you know, your parents are not predictable. You never know when your parents are coming and going or people are going to be around for you. So you're used to chaos. And then you later on pick in your life a partner who's chaotic, and they might be chaotic in a lot of different ways, like not dependable or working or doing things like this. And when you have that relationship, you'll be likely to blame all of the things that your partner is doing on them. And I'm not saying they don't have any responsibility. The reason you'd end up in that relationship in the first place is because you were used to chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos was early on, and this is a new version of chaos. So it's not just that it was like, oh, this person was toxic and they did this to me. I'm not saying that person doesn't have a certain level of toxicity. But also, you might have been in some ways drawn to those things. Okay. And that's what helped you be in that situation. So that's what also makes it hard for you to leave that situation.
I think that that is probably, we work with it and we see it daily. I think that's probably a hard concept for most people to not grasp, but accept. The idea that people gravitate toward, the idea that people subconsciously gravitate towards something that is unhealthy. Because logic and rationale would tell us somebody's hitting you, leave them. You must like it. Like, how many times have we heard from people that we know? We know someone in an abusive relationship, or we know someone that's unhappy, but they won't leave. So we make the deduction, obviously. Like, we don't understand this connection to what is familiar to us. This connection, this idea of patterns, how people seek patterns, how people seek what is familiar. So, like, the everyday average person on the street who doesn't deal with this on a daily basis, I think that that is probably a harder concept to accept than it is for us, because we see it daily. Like, this notion of idea, people are doing it. It's not the chaos that people are chasing. It's not a good or bad feeling or chaos that people are chasing. Something just feels familiar.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there are so many levels that it gets complicated, because people could hear this and say, like, oh, well, he's basically blaming the victim. Not entirely. And I think when I say toxic, toxic to me doesn't automatically mean physical abuse. I mean, I know there's like a different levels, physical, emotional, verbal, but at that top level where, you know, someone's getting physically harmed, that's another level to me. But when things can be toxic in a way, let me give you an example. Things can be toxic in that person that you're in a relationship with doesn't think about you. They don't do anything to really harm you. They're not really per se verbally or physically abusing you, but it's still toxic because it's a one-sided relationship where they only think about themselves and they don't think about you. And when people hear what's that is going on, they say, I don't know why you would want to be in that situation. And part of it could have to do with, well, you know, my parents were self-centered. They really only thought about themselves. I'm used to being in a situation where people don't think about me and I do all of what I can. I give all my effort to get attention paid to me. That is what I've been used to. Even though I'm complaining about it, don't really want it now, it's not as easy for me to leave away from it because that's what I was bred in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that obviously is the first hurdle, is trying to understand it. I don't know. That's all I could think about when I heard that was, why do we stay? And we stay for a lot of different reasons. And it matters if you are, to me, pre and post marriage matters as well. I think investment matters also. What I call investment theory. Every day you're with someone, you invest mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically, and financially in them. And every day you stay, and the more you invest in someone, I think the more you don't want your time to have. Like, how many times have I heard or seen people in horrible relationships, but they say stuff like, well, I'd rather just stay with the devil that I know. Or, we've been together 5 years. What does that have to do with the quality of a relationship? You know, it's kind of like, you know, I tell people all the time, I think relationships are like slot machines. Are you losing more quarters than you winning? That's the question. And you can sit at a slot machine all day, but if you're losing, you're going to stay there and continue to lose? But that is what we do.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny you use the slot machine example because, I mean, if we use that example or another, think about it, like, you've been traveling along the wrong route And you've been traveling along the long route, the wrong route for a long time. Up to this point, you are in a wrong state. You're like miles away from another state. And you're going to say to yourself, you know what? I was trying to go to Idaho, but I'm here in Utah. And, you know, since I've been driving this far and now I'm in Utah, I'm just going to stay in Utah. I mean, people should really be able to think about that, because I'm sure you might have had some situation where the map didn't work right for you. You end up in the wrong spot. I bet you still turned around. You were frustrated. You still tried to get to your right spot. But so that's what it is. People are justifying sitting in that slot machine or justifying being in Utah when they recognize Utah is not wrong because it took me so long to get to here. I got to stay here in Utah. I'm just going to stay in, you know.
Perfect example. Because you know what? That is exactly what people do. That is exact. Like when you figure out you're going, like when you finally figure it out, a lot of times people keep going until they hope and pray that they get somewhere. Like, man, they don't initially say, oh, we're going the wrong way. They don't stop and go back. It's like, man, we've been driving all this way all this time. Let's see what we come up on first. And what you do is you keep going for a while until you get afraid. Until you get afraid and scared that nothing seems familiar.
Yeah.
That you are completely in the unknown. Man, maybe we need to turn back around. Well, when you saw that it was a bad place the first time, you should have turned around. But you kept going, maybe we'll find a gas station. Maybe we'll find. You kept saying, maybe we'll, maybe we'll, maybe we'll. Until things get so bad and you get so far off the track, you finally say, man, the only thing I can do is turn around. Like turning around, see, because you don't want all that time to have been a waste. Right. And that's how we are in relationships.
Well, we add to that example. So when you're driving through Utah, the thing is, it reminds you.
Shout out people in Utah. We're not picking on you, just so you know. We love Utah.
Yeah, no, I mean, Utah is the person that came to my mind. But and I hear it's great. I've never been there. But so when you're driving through said state, you see things that look familiar. You might not even notice they look familiar. They just feel familiar. You ever been around somebody kind of comfortable with them? You don't even know them well. You're just comfortable with them because they remind you of something. That's what's happening. You're like going down this path that is, you know, is sort of not the path you want to go down, but also it's familiar. And then you get more comfortable. It doesn't hit you like it does when you're lost on the road, because you're like, oh, this kind of feels familiar. It's not exactly where I wanted to go, but it feels familiar at an unconscious level, because I don't think you'd be consciously aware that this chaos is a pattern you're familiar with.
Yeah. Another real quick example, because I know we're wearing these examples out. It's like going on vacation and you see gray clouds. You're not just going to pack up and go home. This could pass. This storm could pass. This is such a beautiful place. It looks so good on the brochures. We get here and it's nice. We see the beach, but there's some clouds coming in. Should we just go and take it inside? No, we're going to see if they pass. Then it starts to rain. Well, maybe it's just the overcast. Maybe it'll rain. Maybe it's the overcast. Maybe it's spotty. Maybe it's. And then it rains and it rains and it pours and it never stops. And you go. Then that's when you start to go, man, our vacation is finally ruined. When you saw all these signs before. And the thing is that we always hold out hope, because in the beginning, it looks like sandy beaches. You know what I'm saying? And I think that when we see people, they look attractive. It seems great in the beginning and things start to go wrong. But I think all those bad things don't necessarily outweigh all the good things that you thought you saw in the beginning and all the investments that you start to make in the beginning to make things work.
Well, there's the other thing. So I think that there is a healthy level of, what is it, infatuation that we have with people when we first, well, and I won't say people, but people we're attracted to. So when we first meet them, you know, we're like, oh, you know, he, she, they're so fine, this, that, the other, you know, you have, and then when you start to get to know them, you start to compare them in some ways to things you've had in the past. Like, oh, this person is so much better than that person. Oh my gosh, this is, all these things. And if you've had a history of things being toxic, I think you're more prone to elevate that person higher. I think either one can happen. You can elevate a person too high or not be able to see them for the goodness they are. But in general, if you do tend to elevate them higher, then you have like the wool over your eyes. And I'm sure people say, well, you know, you need to take that veil away from your eyes. Or even maybe that's a prayer that you're saying about a friend of yours. Because that's what happens. You're like, you're seeing them on this in a view that is, it's altered. And in general, it's not like that's horrible. In order for relationships to last, you have to be able to have a positive perspective on your partner and be able to see your partner as more positive in 50-50 situations. But in general, it's so elevated that you can't see who they really are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of times what happens is sometimes the situations that we come from are so horrible that any improvement seems amazing. So I try to tell people all the time, I tell people this all the time, look, just because you're getting something more than you had before, it doesn't mean you're getting something good. It just means you're getting something more. So if your last relationship, if your family was a 2, the person you meet is a 4, they feel amazing. They're twice as good, but they're a 4. And you don't realize it. You're just comparing it, like you said. You compare it to what you had. And because it's something different or something more than what you had, you think you have something good and you actually don't. So if you was getting abused constantly at a 2 and this person don't hit you or beat you, but they curse you out, it feels so much better because of as compared to the trauma that you had before. But it's still something bad and you don't realize it. And I think a lot of people are in situations and relationships like that because they got something more and something better than their childhoods. They think it's something good and it's not.
Right. And I think it's a challenge because I do think you have the opposite, which we're not really going to highlight today, where it's somebody who just sees mistakes or just sees problems with people and can't really. But when you have the person who's been treated so bad, there's a couple things. Obviously, as we talked about trauma before, that are there, like that could be there. One thing is they might be battling with a basic question they need to ask themselves. You know, if you find yourself in bad relationships over and over again, I mean, you're going to look at the other people you're in a relationship with, but at some point, you're going to have to take a look at yourself. And one thing that might be hard for you to ask yourself the question, it's not about pointing the finger, it's about, I mean, we're talking about, like, we think about right now, right? We're going through NBA finals and think about some horrible things that have just happened to some of these players, like, you know, KD and Kyrie out of it. Well, if they don't take some time to have an honest assessment of their part in being swept, then they're not going to be better next year. It's the same thing with these relationships. Yeah. It just might be harder if you've been traumatized. So the pointing at yourself is not necessarily what did I do wrong. It's asking yourself a few questions. I think one question that's helpful that people might be hard to ask is like, do I think I'm worth, you know, a quality relationship?
Wow.
If you answer that question honestly, that might be why you might tell yourself, kind of blow yourself up, but maybe you don't really feel, and it's based on what you experience with things that set you up that way, maybe you don't really feel like that's valuable. That's why you'll accept the 4 and think like the 4 is it. Like, that's the best I'm ever gonna get.
Yeah. Yeah, how many, I know, I've had several people come into my office, and one person who comes by in particular, she particularly dates people who she says, she calls them beneath her or below her.
Oh, that's interesting.
And she knows that she dates men with no car, they ain't got no house, they have to depend on her. Because she has control. One, because she has control. But two, she doesn't feel like she is worthy of a 9 or worthy of an 8. That this is her. This is my level. This is my range. This is my level. And also, these are people that I can control. And she has issues of being controlled as a kid and all of this. She has some abandonment issues and issues of being controlled and wanting to feel important. So it makes her feel important that these people need her and all this kind of stuff. But also, a larger part of it is that this is my range. This is my range and this is my level. So that's interesting how, I mean, again, like you said, just highlighting your point, how you see yourself, what you think you deserve, what you feel like you deserve. Do you feel like you're a queen? Do you feel like you're a king? Do you feel like you have something to offer? When you feel like you truly have something to offer another person or relationship, the world, you walk differently, you talk differently, you speak differently. Your what you will accept is so very different when you feel like you are a person of worth and bring something to the table. And I don't have to put up with this because it's a whole lot of people that wish they was in your position. Not from an arrogance place, but from a self-respect place.
Well, I mean, that is interesting. And I have so many thoughts that's going through my head on that. But let me just try to stick to a few of them. Well, one, I'm just going to say to put it out there, because I think there are some people on the other side of that that probably still end up in toxic relationships that overvalue themselves and what they bring to the relationship.
Yeah.
But the other part is the ones that really can't see their value at all. And then a basic question that I think could also be useful is, and it's, I don't want this to sound like, well, you really, you as a person is enough. And that when you hear that, you might be like, what? What do you mean? I'm not saying you are enough or not enough, but when it comes to relationship, there might be things you have to bring besides actually who you are. You might have to do some things. That's a possibility.
You're not enough. I'll say it. I mean, you want to be nice, but it matters if you're talking about truly contributing to a relate. If we're talking about contributing to a relationship,
right?
You know, but again, it all depends on the person that you're with and what they're willing to accept. Like, some people's standards of what their partner should bring to the table and to the relationship are very different.
True. You know? Back with this idea, right? So listeners say that I don't think that just you breathing and having a 2X chromosomes and an X and Y is enough for the relationship. You're going to need more than that. But the things that you naturally do bring or more inclined to bring, the question would be, do you feel like that's enough? You know, and if you don't feel like that's enough, then because you never feel like you're enough. And plenty of people struggle with that, not just in relationships, wherever they are, in their job, you know. One of the things that I think I've learned over the time, my time as a educator, and I wonder if maybe you have, is that I've met all types of different educators, people that do it different styles, different. Notice that different flavors and different styles can be just as effective. And these people's individuals to embrace who they are and how they bring that uniquely to a situation is important. But in order for you to do that, you have to recognize that, okay, this is who I am. This is what I can bring. And I feel like that is enough. Because otherwise, you spend your life trying to be or offer something that you're not really comfortable offering. So I'll give you, like, you know, an example of that. Like, the most unique situation I've heard that is like that is, I heard about a person, worked with a person once who told me in the beginning of their relationship, their partner wanted them to have sex with other people in front of them. And that was not something that this person was comfortable with, but they did it and now there's regrets after the fact. But this would be an example of something that you don't need to bring or you're not comfortable bringing. You have to be aware of where your line is, where your boundary is, and do you feel like what you naturally would bring would be enough? And if it is, then that might be the end of that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we get here? Toxic relationships and why we stay. And our inabilities, why we attracted to, here we are again, why we're attracted to these personalities and why we stay in these situations. And again, as we said before, past experiences, past traumas, past relationships all feed into self-worth, how we think about ourselves, how we think about what we're worth, how we think about what we can bring, ultimately playing an important part in why some people choose to stay in situations that might be unhealthy and why some people choose not to. And again, like you said, there's so many different variables on why people stay in bad situations. I'm interested. For me, investment theory is one of those big things, though. You know, the more we invest in people, the more we don't want our time to have been a waste.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And then I think that's what's so interesting about this ultimatum show, because we're talking now about unhealthy and toxic. And I think maybe we'll get to a point where we're just talking about relationships in general, but not every relationship is meant to be. And the reality is, if it's not a toxic situation, it could be a situation that's not meant to be, and that's okay. You know, like, hey, we tried it, we dated, that's why you date, and we don't fit. There's nothing wrong with you. It's not something wrong with me. It's just this is not, we're not an item.
Yeah. We talked about it before. Like, that's the hardest thing is just because we love it, loving somebody and being together are two completely different things. And I don't think that people understand that. We're fed this lie that just because you love somebody, you're supposed to try to stick it out. And like we said, relationships have nothing to do with love and everything to do with what do we have in common? Can we share space and can we help each other grow? Can we continue to help each other grow?
Well, I think that's a problem. Most people are like, no, no. Disney told me relationship is about love. Like, did you see Beauty and the Beast? Like, that's what happened. Like, this is love that makes it work. Granted, I'm not saying that love's not important. I can just hear people saying, like, oh, he doesn't think love matters. No, I'm just saying love is not enough.
Yeah, that's a good way to get stoned on the way to your car. That's truly, I don't think that we will. Love is the best drug going. It truly is. It's the best drug and the best hustle going. If you make somebody believe you love them, you can get them to do anything or get anything out of them. Like people sell love like a drug. So I don't know.
I mean, that's another point, right? Well, we think about these toxic situations. Obviously, it's very complex. There's lots of levels, but we're going all the way into my Netflix bag now. So there's this other show that I've been watching. What's it called? Like the something vegan. I don't remember. Sometimes I don't remember the exact names of it, but y'all can look it up. And basically what happens with the story is she gets conned out of a whole bunch of money. And the thing he uses to con her is love. And it's crazy when you see it go down because that's what it is. It's being used just like a drug. And if people have a certain vulnerability, then they are susceptible to toxic situations.
Are women or men more susceptible to it?
Oh, Well, I want to do like one or the other. Like that's, I don't, you know, I'm not, you're not going to get me in that trap. But I would say.
What do you mean? I'm not trying to trap you? It's your boy. What do you mean? I'm not trying to trap you. But who's more likely to be the quote unquote sucker for love?
Yeah, no, I really have a hard time just saying it's one over the other. I think off the top of my head, I would think women. But also, I think it comes out. It's played out in different ways with men.
I wonder if women. If women are more vulnerable when it comes to the emotional side and men are more vulnerable when it comes to the physical side. I heard a very attractive woman say that she has dated multimillionaires that could juggle and they could run million-dollar corporations but would fall head over heels over a woman and would do anything for sex. That they could think logically and rationally when it came to business and they could run million-dollar companies, but when it came to women and sex and sexuality, you could get a man to do anything because men would do anything for sex. And I wonder, is it a good question to ask, are women take that same principle but apply love and emotion to it? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think men are definitely more physical in terms of, I don't want to say physical in terms of like their level of being manipulated and vulnerable. I also think that women grow up learning that that's the one tool that they have. Okay, maybe they have more than that as a tool, I mean, for the women that are listening, but I'm just saying in general, even in Disney, it's not sex, but it's beauty. Like, it's like, that's what you have, the way that you look, you know, and you have lots of stipulation being put on how women should represent themselves, many more things for women in terms of how they dress and how they can, you know, perk things up and like, you know, hide things and make things look a certain way. A lot more cosmetic things going on. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just like, there's way more of that going on. Also though, I think that there is an emotional vulnerability to some men. Like you could see that in some men, even though when they've been very successful, some things that have driven their success, maybe this lack of power that they felt. And it could have been from lots of areas, but maybe lack of those good relationships when they were younger. And even when they get this money and power, what's the reason you want to get the money and power? sometimes.
Stop.
You get the woman.
I'm not allowing this to happen this evening, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just. I mean, hey,
why do
you know,
men?
Younger,
why do let's be serious? Like, why do men want to be like? Powerful? What is a What's perk? That? What is a perk of being powerful? Let's be for real. Yeah, you like, oh, men are they're all powerful, and maybe it's because they were hurt as a kid. Why do what drives men to be powerful? What is one? What's a? Because what do all men feel like? What do most men feel like is a perk of being powerful?
Getting women.
Women.
Right, but that doesn't mean that it's not initiated or started by these other things, but it is a perk, but you learn how you get it and what it means. But then I think it's there's levels that obviously for some men it's just sexual, but then I think other men that it's not sexual, that's how that person becomes a Jezebel to
Agreed.
Samson.
Agreed. I agree. I also think that it can because a lot of times we are chasing the physical and we are chasing sex, I think it makes us susceptible to being duped. Because, and it's not because of some emotional thing. I think that, think about all the things that men do for the prospect of having sex with someone. Take you out on dates. Take you to a restaurant. Take you, but like, listen, for anyone listening, I am not saying that every time a man dates you, it is all because he wants to have sex with you. But let's be for real. If we're being honest, like a lot of times that is a goal. Like at some point or another, men are hoping that is going to happen. If I show her I invest in her, or I invest in this person, that eventually, that is like a prize that men are trying to get. So I'm saying all that to say, the prospect of sex and the way men chase sex can also make, I think, can make men vulnerable. And the question is, do women know that?
Yes, they know that. Okay, so I think the other thing is, gun dry. You know, women know that. Of course they know. They think that's like their thing. They feel like, you know, the cookie is like the golden thing, right? I think that a lot of women feel that way. That's just my opinion. But also, I think it starts out physical, and the difference between males and females, as you're mentioning, in some regard, has to do with this. Women thrive sometimes more on the emotional connection. It doesn't mean that men don't make the emotional connection, but the emotional connection might happen through the physical.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that there aren't women who just don't want to have sex.
Right.
But you know, ultimately, this gets into an entire conversation that we're going to have at some point or another, because we've opened another can of worms. I know this seems like a simple question, but it's actually not. How different are we? Because the same. The only thing when you ask people, they will say the thing that differentiates us is our genitalia. And is that true? And then you will hear people say it's our genitalia and all the other differences are social. You know what I mean? All these things are socially constructed. How different are we? I mean, we're sitting around and we're kind of tongue in cheek, but let's get serious. Like, are we truly different in that way? Like, do men chase sex? Do women chase emotion? You know, me. I mean, I still play heavily. I still truly believe in, when you say evolution, and it sounds like we're talking about like dragging your knuckles and a big brow and Neanderthals. All I'm saying is, I think that there are certain things that are etched in our DNA that to ensure our survival as people. So I think that there are certain traits that we have that this idea of men being attracted to women and men want to have sex and all this kind of stuff. I think that those are things that are etched in our DNA, like to keep survive. Like those are things that are necessary to like keep the species going. This idea of men wanting sex and being driven by sex and like being attracted to women, I wonder from an evolutionary place, is that necessary? Like, that's why we like sex and we like women and we're attracted to women. It's not just that men are just pigs. I mean, on a deep structure level, it means something. This idea of emotion and bonding means something because, like, you know, oxytocin and women take care of kids and, like, is it more than just social stuff? Like, are we this? Like I said, we can't let our phones fool us. At the end of the day, we're animals. The only thing that separates you from a monkey is you can think about tomorrow. Now, people and I like people not like the way that sounds, but that is true. From a cognitive perspective, the only thing that separates us from a monkey or any other animal is that we have your frontal lobe. You have the ability to think about tomorrow and possibilities. But other than that, there are no differences. So I wonder, how does all that sort of play into how we see behavior, how we all see relationships, why we stay in relationships, the people that we chase, why men chase sex, why looks matter to men, like all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think where my mind goes is it goes specifically to how, if somebody was wondering, how they might be able to identify their telltale signs that they might be lean towards a toxic situation. So I would say if you're a male, it would be recognizing how many of the relationships you've been in that have been the main primary thing has been sex. In other words, if you took sex away, what would you do? If you left with nothing, I'm not saying you shouldn't have sex. Yes, folks, I think you should. I know we got, you know, different good Christian folk listening, but I think that sex is a good part of a healthy relationship. But if it's all that you do, that's one thing. And then if you're a woman, I mean, these could go either way, but I think you might be more likely to see this with women. If you recognize that you use that in that way, and sometimes, you know, there's the whole balance that women have to go through in terms of like how soon should that happen or not. But sometimes I think people use it that are more likely to find themselves in toxic situations, they use it sooner. They lead with that. And they lead with that because they think it's going to be like that kryptonite, that's going to be it. Boom, this is a knockout punch. Once this happens, we just keeping it real tonight. It's going to be, you know what I'm saying?
It sounds like we need to create a panel for this one. It absolutely does. That's one of the things that I asked a couple once. Like, I truly believe, like, I also wonder if all you do is have sex, is that because that's all you have to offer each other? You know? And like you said, I think, I'm not saying, but if that's all you do constantly, right, when are you talking? When are you getting to know each other? When are you getting in this space to help each other achieve your dreams? Like, and I know couples that's pretty much all they do and all they have in common. And like you said, if you lay with anybody, if you roll over and look at anybody long enough, eventually your body and mind will become habituated and satiated. And when all the good sex is over and all the kinky stuff is over, the question is, all you have are your goals, values, and beliefs.
Yeah.
And what do you have to stand on? And like I said, man, good sex will make you overlook a whole lot of toxic stuff about somebody in the beginning.
Of course, because it's literally, it's hijacking your brain. Right? It's releasing those neurotransmitters and hormones that make you feel good. I mean, it's like you said, it's like a drug. So basically, you need to constantly be in that state. And then when you're in that state, you're ignoring all these other things. All you know is like, oh, it made me feel good. That's kind of like what you associate them with. And then sometimes, even when you get an argument, once that argument is over, you go back to that. And then you're like, oh, we argued, but then sex was great. So everything is good now.
That's why I tell people, makeup sex is the worst sex you can have. Because you're doing all of this screwing and you ain't doing no talking. Mm. And like, you can't screw your way out of your problems. And that's a part of the problem is, they say, this is why you continue to argue about the same things over and over and over. It's because you're trying to screw your way through your problems and you're not doing enough. A little less. I always tell people, like, having some really serious issues, I think the last thing you should be doing is having sex. I think you should put shelf sex for, I'm not saying a year, I mean, but just like shelf it for a minute so you can figure through stuff, because sex will fool you. It'll make you believe, well, if we weren't okay, he wouldn't be laying here with me, or she wouldn't be doing this, or he wouldn't be doing that, or like it truly hijacks your brain. And it's why you consistently stay in a situation that's not healthy or that's not working. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're doing way too much screwing and not enough talking and not enough communicating.
Yeah, and I think it really is a challenge for some people, because, you know, some people, sex is not, even though it gives you the feel goods, it's about bonding. It's about having that close relationship. It's essentially like what a mother's hugging of a baby is to an adult after the cuddling, the whole all of it that goes along with it, particularly if there are not other areas in that relationship where they feel like they connect.
Yeah.
So that makes it hard too, because when you have that disconnect of that, if that's how you're connecting, if that is the only way or the way that primarily one of you connects, then that's also a problem.
And it is probably one of the only times in most people's lives that they get an instant reward. You know, when you work, you got to wait 2 weeks to get a good job. Yeah. It is one of the only times that you instantly know that you're worthy in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's hard not to, I can understand how it's hard, especially with, you know, I was talking to somebody that has like some abandonment issues. So the way that they sought that they were worthy was through sex, because it was something I was good at.
Yeah.
And you instantly know right there, I am worthy of something. So it's hard to not continue to do it. So, you know, talked to a few people who dealt with issues of promiscuity when they were younger, and that was why, because it was something I knew literally as simple as it was something I knew I was good at.
Right.
So I don't know. But yeah, the Johnny Depp thing, I think something else real quick before we come up on time. And again, station identification, WMUL 88.1 FM. On your dial, this is Dr. Chapman and Dr. Hinton, and we are just touching on the Johnny Depp case, but more specifically asking the question, what are some of the things that play a part in why people stay in unhealthy relationships and unhealthy situations? I think something that jumped out at me was, I think she, that actually scared me, was at some point along the way, within their entire chaos, she made some sort of statement like, no one would believe him if he said that no one would believe him if he said that she had hit her. And that scared me. You know what I mean? Like, to know that you have that type of power. You know what I'm saying? It made me think of, I mean, this is maybe an extreme, but like Emmett Till, it's kind of like to know you have that kind of power. You know what I mean? That no one will believe you, you know?
Right.
I wonder, are we afraid as a, when we hear allegations, what I find is typically people believe the woman. Like I've heard people say, nobody would lie about something like this. Nobody would lie about being raped, or nobody would lie about something like that. I wonder if we are, it's understandable. I mean, women and kids suffer at the hands of domestic violence way more, obviously, way more often than men do. But I wonder if we are, when an accusation is made, are we more likely to jump and believe the accuser if she's a woman, because women have suffered at the hands of that for so long? And the idea that somebody would, like his girlfriend, the idea that is real, what's appalling about it is that the idea that she would use something like that, and it's women in these streets really going through something. You know what I mean? What's like scary to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's complicated. I was reading something about it, and I guess their psychologist, either maybe they had a couple psychologists or something, said something like he thought it was mutual abuse. And I do see cases where there's mutual domestic violence, and it can be hard to decipher between the chicken or the egg when you have a situation where both people are violent.
Yeah.
And I don't know the specifics of this case, but what hit me about that statement that she made is thinking about males that are victim of domestic violence that will never tell their story. And I have seen, I'm sure you have, rather, it's not just domestic violence, but it's all kinds of things, sexual assault, a whole bunch of things. And then so obviously it's gonna be uncomfortable for you to talk about something like sexual assault, but people are more likely to believe it in certain circumstances. Right. If it's a guy to a girl, or even if it's a guy and a guy, but if it's a girl and a guy, people sometimes question that. Like, I don't understand like how that could happen. She's smaller than you. She's shorter than you. You mean, okay, so what if she slapped you? Like, you should be able to take a slap. Like, what's the big deal? I think there's a whole different expectation about what the threshold is for domestic violence with men.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming from a woman.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like you said, a lot of times men don't say anything because then your masculinity comes into question.
Yeah.
Like, I know somebody who was getting beat up by his partner pretty badly. And he went to, like, to report it. And, like, he was like, these cops, like, laughed at him. It was like, basically, like, you can't control your woman.
Right.
And I, like, literally laughed until he just left. Like, they made jokes and was condescending and, you know what I mean? And, oh, she's the big bat. It was that kind of thing. And so he just got up and left. And I think that men being hit or abused or verbally abused is probably more common than we think. But
for sure,
as men, we don't know that that should bother us. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, once I really started practicing, it surprised me. It really threw me for a loop how many men that I have seen that have been sexually abused as kids. But because it was a babysitter or was an older woman, we don't even know to call that abuse because we're supposed to like it. And if you don't like it, there's something wrong with you. And it's the way that you become a man. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I can think of other cases, you know, in general, like things that are like, we don't think about that, well, even as I share this example, like, I don't want to give it that label, but I'll just tell you what happened because it did happen. I remember when I was, I don't know, I must have been 8 or 9, man. I had a girl who really liked me, and she forced herself on me and then, like, made out with me. Yeah. And I think if that had happened in reverse, that would be considered some type of assault. I don't even know what label to give it. But I'm saying, I think these things are just more common than we think. And when it's a girl, it's like, oh, okay, so what's the big deal? She made out with you. Like, you should be happy. And but no is no, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. But the idea... See, I did it. Women are smaller, and we feel like women can't have control of situations like that. And I think it's complicated. And again, for anybody listening, we're not in any way trying to disregard or degrade or say that women, you know, women don't suffer more at the hands of domestic violence. We just think that it probably happens more to men than we think. And like this Johnny Depp case, hearing, you know, he says, you punch me, and she goes, no, I hit you. I was hitting you. I wasn't punching you. Well, what, you know, when we hear stuff like that, like, men can be abused too. And it's important that we ask ourselves, why don't we react and respond with the same vigor and in the same, and in the same way? It's like, you know, it's something I talked about before. We talk about sexual assault, and it's like, we talk about men being abused or sexually assaulted in jails, and we just don't react the same.
Yeah, it's true.
Men are raped in jail all the time. We don't react the same.
I think with the Johnny Depp case, I don't know, because we're not in the couple. And I think maybe it is a form of mutual something going on there. But I think the point that I want to make is that men are out there being abused and not returning the abuse. The real thing, it happens. Sure, it doesn't happen as much as it happens to women. But also, it's probably happening more than you think because it's not going to be reported. It's like, what if it's a big dude whose girl is little?
Yeah.
Plenty of aggressive little girls out there, like, you know, smaller, that are smaller than their dude, that are, like, doing some messed up stuff that's abuse.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing is, it's so hard. I think even sitting here, like, I'm actually kind of on pins and needles even talking about it. Like, there's just certain things that maybe true, but I feel like we can't say.
Mm.
Like, I'm waiting on the call tomorrow because we talked about this. This idea, because we're disrespecting, you know, women in abuse. Somebody's gonna come with all these, and we never said that women aren't abused or women aren't abused more. You know what I mean? But I just wonder, what are the consequences of constantly ignoring this? You know, this phenomenon, I don't want to say it's a phenomenon, this thing that happens, that truly happens to men. It's like men are trying to scream and say, this is happening to us, but nobody's listening. So what are the consequences of that, of not addressing it?
Right. And I think that, I mean, hopefully listeners understand, the show is called Brother to Brother. Right. If two brothers can't talk about issues like this, like domestic violence and how it affect men that are not the perpetrators, then that's problematic. I mean, this is like probably stuff that might not be happening in man caves. These might not be conversations that are had, but they probably need to be had. Because I guarantee with you that it's not just the man that experienced it. It's what about that boy who experienced it when he was younger and has not been able to speak about it?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, to your point, this is brother to brother. Somebody will say, "Where there's got to be balance, and you, why don't you highlight women's?" You know, I think the thing is that we're talking about this because it's not highlighted, and it's not talked. How many conversations have you heard about abuse against men? How many have you sat on? How many panels have you sat on? How many radio shows have you heard? Like, I truly believe that to some extent, to some degree, men know. The social consequences of saying something like this is because people are going to come out, you know, women are, it's like we always have to compare and it just can't deserve its own little integrity. You know what I'm saying? It's like when black people say, I'm discriminated against. Somebody feels like they have to say, well, I'm white and I'm poor and I got it hard too. Like everybody can have their own plight and everybody's plight can have, it deserves its own integrity. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't always have to be comparing one against the other, but that will, if anybody's bothered, that will be the reaction. You know what I'm saying? Like women are abused way more and it feels like you're disrespecting and downing women's experiences and saying it's equal. And we're not saying it's equal. We're just saying that it's something that probably deserves a conversation.
I feel like listeners will get it. I have faith in the people.
You have. He has faith in the people, and that is why you're here, my friend, and that is why you are the best at what you do, because you have faith. Again, for those, we thank you, and maybe we'll continue down this road next week. Let's make a couple notes and rock and roll and continue down this road. Again, those who would like to participate, B2BPsych, B, the number 2B, PSYC at gmail.com. Again, we thank those who continue to listen and support. We say peace and blessings to you. Again, as always, any of the comments, suggestions, or perspectives you hear on this show are representative of any of the institutions or any of the work that we do or anyone we work for. It is not representative of Marshall University, WMUL, any of the supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. These are just our perspectives and ideas. Again, it's just two brothers just trying to flesh out stuff, trying to have, meaningful dialogue and hopefully inspiring meaningful dialogue amongst, you know, those of you who may be listening. So as always say, peace and blessings to everyone out there. You know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that when you die empty. Don't take any of your goals or dreams or wishes with you. Do everything that you can. Do something that will set your soul on fire and the people that you love. Make sure they know. Peace and blessings to you. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
So I guess I want to speak to the gentlemen, boys, and men out there that might have experienced some of these things. Maybe you had someone in a relationship or relationship you're in now. Relationship you've been in the past, where somebody did something, and their way of keeping you from talking was saying, "No one will ever believe you, because you're a guy and I'm a girl." So I'm speaking specifically to guys that have been affected in some form by abuse, either the physical or sexual, by a female, and you've heard that no one will ever believe you. So I just want you to know there are people that will believe you. You know, you have to find a resource, a therapist that can tap into and you can have those conversations with. And it might be worth having them because you may not even recognize how it might show up in your relationship. I've met plenty of people who have feel some disconnection in their current relationship. And then when they look at it, it's a past pattern coming back up from something they experienced in their past that they never dealt with. And it's showing up in the present, but it's basically a seed of the past. Just like when women go through these things and have those different problems that come up later on in their relationships, it can happen to men. So I just want to encourage you, my fellow brothers, that if you have this situation going on with you, maybe now is the time to consider having that conversation. You know, being strong always also involves having some courage. You know, being courageous enough to be a soldier means that we fight lots of different battles, and sometimes it's an internal battle. And sometimes you need someone to assist you with that internal battle. And once you get assistance with that, you're going to come out on the other side growing through the pain. But you got to go through the pain to grow through the pain, even though society tells us to ignore it, that big boys don't cry. that we're not supposed to have feelings. We're human. So just like our counterparts of females, we have feelings, we have emotions, and you're able to be a complete male. So I'm challenging you to go out and get that assistance. Talk to someone that you know you can trust. Peace and blessings. We'll see you next week.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Hey, this is Jenny from the Erickson's.
This is Kyle Bachman from Coyotes and Boxes.
I'm Bobby Hackney.
And I'm Dennis Hackney.
And I'm Bobby Duncan.
And we're the band Death.
And you're listening to...
And you're listening to...
And you're listening to...
88.1 WMUL.
WMUL 88.1.
WMUL. Huntington.